A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 184. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about The Deep. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, a BBC show from 2010, The Deep, 5 one-hour episodes. And one of the startling things about it is we've got a very big name cast. And we've got a tale of undersea exploration and, as the title would suggest, things going wrong very deep in underneath the Arctic ice cap, Ryan.
Yes, absolutely. We have scientific exploration with some possibly fearful discoveries and some potentially big things going on, which are kind of interesting. And it gives us this enclosed claustrophobic drama on these submarines with the Orpheus descending into the depths of the ocean.
That's right. So the setup, it is described by the production team in the DVD extras as being set about 5 minutes into the future.
I can't help but wonder if that's a reference to Max Headroom, 20 minutes in the future. Maybe not, but it certainly reminds me of it.
Okay, right. So the Orpheus is a state-of-the-art research submarine. It's on a mission of exploration deep below the Arctic ice cap. We'll get in a little bit in a moment about the science of what they're actually exploring. But they've also got another sort of mission or another interest down there, Brian.
Yes, there was an earlier submarine on a similar research mission called Hermes. And the Hermes was lost with all hands. It was never seen again. So in addition to doing this research, they want to discover what happened to the Hermes. And one of the crew members has a special connection to the Hermes because his wife was on board. So he particularly wants to know what happened to that vessel.
Okay, but the fate of the Orpheus may also be decided by another crew member, although he's not really a crew member, he's a late addition to the team who's sort of forced upon them, and he has rather a different agenda to the rest of the crew, and one that's going to, well, let's say it, it's going to put them all in deep jeopardy, I think, Brian.
Yes, indeed. So we have quite a cast of characters, so let's take a look at those.
Okay, we have the captain of the Orpheus, Captain Francis Kelly, played by the Hollywood actress Minnie Driver, best known for her film roles, but here she is on BBC TV. Presented to us as a dedicated and professional captain, absolutely committed to the science of the mission, but also dedicated to getting her crew back in one piece, something which is probably not going to be possible, bearing in mind that we've got a TV drama on our hands, but there you go.
She does have the sort of classic TV captain role there, but she brings a bit of humanity to it too, which is nice. Samson, played by Goran Vistjik from ER, is a scientist who, it seems, may have a romantic connection to Francis as well. And that comes into play, and his work on the science of things and his work on the submarine comes into play as well.
Yes, that's right. But it's a source of tension. As you say, there may be a romantic interest between him and Francis, but there's not supposed to be, because we learn right at the start that he's a married man. So that's another sort of complicating factor for the senior people on board this ship and the rest of the crew.
Yes, that's right. Clem, played by James Nesbitt, who we, of course, remember from Jekyll, is the engineer aboard the Orpheus, and he is quite dedicated to making everything work and getting things to continue to work. He operates the mini sub Lurch, which is like a little one-man submarine that can go out and collect samples. And it was his wife, Catherine, who was on the Hermes mission earlier on. So he is very interested and emotionally tied to finding out about the Hermes. He's quite an emotional character in general compared to some of the others. So it makes things interesting, and he definitely shakes things up in this crew.
And of course, as you say, James Nesbitt, who we remember well from Jekyll, very popular British actor, and sort of completing the big three cast members on board the Orpheus.
Yes, I think so. But you have some other interesting characters too. Vincent was played by Sacha Dhawan, who of course would go on to be in An Adventure in Space and Time, the docudrama that talked about the origins of Doctor Who. So he's sort of a young, adventurous scientist who's very enthusiastic, and he brings quite a lot to this cast and this crew as well.
Yes, absolutely. And we've got two other junior members of the crew. We've got Svetlana, who is the computer expert, played by the actress Vera Vilitova. And then we have Maddie, another scientist, played by Antonia Thomas, who you may have seen in the Channel 4 show Misfits, where she played the character Alicia. They complete the sort of regular crew of the Orpheus, but as I say, we've got this late addition to the crew, forced upon them by the Admiralty, a character played by Tobias Menzies, who we've seen in Game of Thrones. Raymond Hopkins is the character's name, sold to us and the crew as a salvage specialist, particularly interested in retrieving the sort of black box equivalent from the Hermes submarine. But as the story unfolds, we start to have questions about why he's really on board, Brian. He's a mysterious character.
Yes, absolutely. So pushing a little further into the show and the story of it, the Orpheus is investigating the life forms that are found near deep sea vents. So there are these vents on the seafloor that are hydrothermal, as they call them, smokers, that may have some clues to the origins of life and have their own ecosystem with all of these strange creatures that can be studied. And there are also hints that maybe some things there could lead to new fuels that could affect things with energy usage, and there may be environmental questions and sort of political things coming into it. So there are lots of interesting and complicated possibilities there.
And when we see these sort of hydrothermal vents, the crew sort of looking out the front window of the Orpheus, I think Maddie refers to them as the engines of existence, but Clem instead prefers to call them gateways to hell, perhaps, I think, reflecting what's happened to him, because he clearly wants to know what's happened to his wife, Catherine, as you said, Brian. And I suppose there's an obvious connection in that we have the ship called Orpheus, and Clem is following his dead wife into the underworld. So there's some clear, you know, names and parallels going on there.
Yes, a little bit of mythology thrown in never hurts.
That's right. But of course, as we would expect, things don't go according to plan. And while Samson is actually in Lurch, this little sort of pod submarine that goes out, the Orpheus suffers a critical equipment failure. Everything seems to black out and some systems come back online. Samson is literally left in the Lurch and everybody's lives seem to be at risk.
Yes, that's right. And of course, there is something else down there with them. And exactly what, they're not quite sure. And there are strange and mysterious things going on here that may lead them to find out what happened to the Hermes.
My God, Vince! Are you seeing this? Some of these must be 20 stories high.
Yeah, I'm seeing it. It's just like Catherine said, three times the height of the Endeavour vents. Must be cemented by barite.
We could be looking at internal chimney temperatures of anything up to at least 750 Celsius.
The sooner we locate the black box, the sooner you can take a look at the scenery.
Has anyone seen Clem? I thought he was here. Where is he?
So we should get to our production notes. The BBC asked the production company Tiger Aspect to produce a submarine show. Tiger Aspect had produced Mr. Bean, Billy Elliot, the League of Gentlemen movie, and Ripper Street, so they were quite established by this point.
That's right, and they turned to a TV writer called Simon Donald, who, interestingly for us on British Invaders, actually was an actor first, and I believe he was in Channel 4's vampire show Ultraviolet before going on to write for television. And he created this show. I think they took influences from lots of other submarine films and television and noted that most of the other examples, things like the Das Boot and Crimson Tide and the like, that most of them were based on military submarines. And they decided they wanted to change from that and do something based on a scientific expedition and a purely scientific submarine. We know, as we've said already, they've managed to secure this big-name cast and also, I think, a fairly impressive CGI budget because it does look very good, which we'll talk about as we go along.
Yes, absolutely. The producer was Will Gold. It was directed by Jim O'Hanlon and Colm McCarthy. The submarine sets were designed by Andy Thompson and gave us a very nice, enclosed, yet sort of livable look to them. And the CGI was delivered with some quite successful results by a VFX team led by Simon Carr.
Yes, and they do look very good. And when you watch some of the extras on the DVDs and see how they produce some of the shots, it's really quite impressive and some of the best CGI that we've seen for some time on television, I think. But again, something to talk about in our next episode. We should mention the music. Samuel Sim gives us a fairly dramatic theme tune, which featured in all the various trailers and the sort of next week slots at the end of the show. We've got a couple of other notables. We've got a makeup artist called Linda Morton, who had to study Burns victims in order to reproduce the sort of makeup effects for characters who, well, let's give it away slightly. Some of the characters are exposed to radiation later on in the show, and so we get to see some quite horrific burns. And they took the shoot to Scotland, to the Dumbarton Studios, but also on location at the ports. That's Ardrossan and Irvine Port. And, you know, again, the sort of scenes where they're on the ship that's going to carry the Orpheus out and the crew joining the ship, that's all very well filmed and looks very good, particularly when you realise from the DVD extras that the Orpheus that they see on board the ship is not actually there at all. It was all totally created by CGI.
Yes, it was done quite well, for sure. The British Film Institute screened the first episode about a week before the broadcast and had a cast Q&A, so this was viewed to be a big enough thing to have a launch event like that. It was broadcast in August 2010 on BBC One with a BBC HD simulcast as well.
So as you say, a big show for the BBC, big cast, big production, and they clearly threw a lot of sort of energy at promoting it with this BFI special event, and as you say, an HD simulcast, Whether they got the results they hoped for, well, we'll talk about that next time as well.
So we should talk about the availability.
Okay, well, over here in Region 2, it's fairly straightforward. We have a nice DVD release, which for first time in a while, I think Brian actually has three extra features, some short making of documentaries. And it is nice to see a DVD set with some extras for a change.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's very cheap currently on Amazon, £4 that's going for at the moment. And there is also a Blu-ray, which at the moment the price seems to have gone up slightly because that's now going for £10. But as I say, the basic DVD, which includes the extras, £4, very good value. Not on any of the rental sites at the moment that I can see, nor is it on YouTube. But if you go to the BBC's own site, you'll see some clips and trailers from the show, which will give you the sort of general idea if you want to have a look at that before buying. Meanwhile, over in Region 1...
There is no Region 1 release. The Region 2 import is on Amazon.com for about $14. And the Blu-ray is available for $39 or $24 in Canada. As often is the case, the best choice is usually to import directly from the UK.
Okay. So I guess that will wrap us up for this episode, Brian. Next time?
It will indeed. Next time, we will reveal some of the secrets of the deep and talk about how the Hermes was destroyed and what might happen to the Orpheus.
Plus, we'll get into our own feelings about this show, give you our reviews and our particular recommendations.
That's right. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. We are a proud member of the geekculturenetwork.com, so you can find us there along with some other podcasts. And we have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there.
Okay, we're also proud members of the Voice of Geek streaming radio network on the internet. That's at vognetwork.com. British Invaders, one of a number of geek-related shows that goes out on that channel, and we go out on Monday and Tuesday evenings, but you'll find lots of other interesting shows there. And as ever, we welcome our Vogue Network listeners.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England also, signing off.